Hello, everybody. You are listening to Corpse Run Radio. This is Ian Hazzikostas, and enjoy.
Vol'jin said I should step out of the shadows. So I did. Here I am asking you to join the fight. For the Horde! And for the Forsaken. Welcome to Corpse Run Radio. This is Corpse Run Radio. We are the Forsaken. We are the Forsaken.
Hello and welcome to episode 37 of Corpse Run Radio. I'm really excited because we have a song premiere for you today. I've spoken with Carwolf a couple of weeks ago, and we discussed, after me asking him if he ever had done a song about the Dark Lady, and him saying he hadn't, so then we started looking for different songs that might work. Well, he did most of it, and we came up with this song by Black Veil Brides called The Outsider. And after he played it for me, I thought, yep, that's a very nice rhythm, good beat. So that's where we left it. And then last week we chatted again, and he apparently had finished the song already. He sent me the lyrics, and I read through them, and then next I found the MP3 in a DM to download. So I was really, really happy, and it's a really awesome work. I'm really happy that he did it so fast. But enough of me talking about it. The first segment of the show today is going to be a slightly impressive mini thing called The Problem with Paladins. And since the Forsaken always have had problems with paladins, because obviously holy and stuff, I thought that that would be kind of a nice little thing to start the show with today. And following that, it's like a 2-2.5 minute thing. Following that, we are going to hear, like I said, for the first time, you are going to hear Carwolf's parody of The Outsider, which is called The Windrunner. So here you go. Enjoy.
I need a heal. Throw a blessing of judgment, light, divine aura on me.
What?
Look, I don't really understand paladin spells, okay?
It's really simple. There are blessings, judgments, heals, seals, auras, and hands.
Hands? What is a hand? How do you hand somebody?
You know, you just kind of hand them.
Oh, well, that clears it up.
No, really. What's with all your heals having the same name? I mean, you can't really tell me that Holy Radiance, Holy Light, Divine Light, Flash of Light, and Light of Dawn all do different things.
Of course they do. Those are all totally different spells with completely different... Yeah, okay, you're right. We just sort of shout out whatever vaguely religious-sounding thing comes to mind while healing. But don't tell anyone I told you that.
I knew it. This is just like that time I found out all the rogues have an imaginary friend.
What? No, we don't. That's ridiculous. Shut up, Grifta.
Okay, well, you can't say this spell is just like all the others.
Whoa, you have a pet glowy angel man?
He's not a pet, he's my guardian of ancient kings.
You're an ancient king?
No, I guess he was sent by some ancient kings or something. I'm not really sure.
What's his name?
I don't know.
What? He fights for you whenever you call upon him, and you haven't even bothered to ask him his name?
Seriously, even warlocks know their demon slave's name.
Seems like a pretty one-sided friendship.
But, I mean, we're not friends exactly.
Wow, that's cold, man.
You can talk?
Yeah, of course I can talk.
Well, why haven't you ever said anything before?
Well, did you ever bother to ask me anything? Or even say hi to me?
Okay, geez, I'm sorry. Everyone just get off my back.
Hey, why don't you just bubble hearth your self-righteous metal dress-wearing self on out of here and find some other divine embodiment of holy energy to fight for you?
Well, okay. Bye, then.
That was fun. So, I'm Jim. How are you guys?
You told him the secret about our spells, and you got fired by your own guardian of ancient kings? In the same afternoon?
Does this mean I don't get an Ashbringer?
Tortured soul. Once an elf in Quel'Thalas, banshee queen of Lordaeron, and for the Horde, the undead at her command, all forsaken at her hand, and no time for games.
What are we if not slaves to this torment?
Suffer well through the night, you can't flee from the fight. I am the Windrunner, ain't it true, let none survive, no, the Horde will never die. I am the Windrunner. The Legion came, watched the war chief bulge and fall, took the title from his call, and now she leaves. Will you suffer in this life? If you don't, in your next life, you'll join her race. Suffer well through the night, you can't flee from the fight. I am the Windrunner, aim it true, let none survive. No, the Horde will never die. I am the Windrunner.
Greymane's forces hold this Warden Tower. Break their ranks! Show no mercy!
No doubt I am your favorite Windrunner sister. Right? Right?
Suffer well through the night. You can't flee from the fight. Aim it true, let none survive.
Plans? Little old me? What sort of plans could I possibly have?
Suffer well through the night, you can't flee from the fight.
From the fight!
I am the Windrunner, aim it true, let none survive. No, the Horde will never die. I am the Windrunner.
That was The Windrunner. Thank you, Carvo, for letting us play that on our show as a premiere. From what I've understood from Carvo, the song is going to be out on his YouTube channel once the video is done. So look forward to that and watch his YouTube channel. Next up, we have Hazel from Hazelnutty Games with Pilfer Pet Battle Guide and Family Fighter Strategies. We haven't had a pet battle guide for a while, so we're back with another one from Argus.
Hi, I'm Hazel, and this is your guide to the Pilfer Pet Battle on Argus. I'm going to start with a super quick strat for world questing, and then go through family-specific teams for the Family Fighter achievement. Pilfer lives here in the Antoran Wastes. I don't know what he could possibly be stealing out here, but it's time for it to stop. First up, the fastest strategy for when you just want to get your world quest done and go. This also doubles as the beast strat. First is any raptor with more than 263 speed set up with exposed wounds, and second is your Zandalari Ankle Runder or Kneebiter with Black Claw and Hunting Party. any third beast should do, but another Falcosaur won't hurt, especially if you're not rocking the full attack breed of the first one. Starting with the Exposed Wounds Raptor, use Exposed Wounds and then promptly die. Bring in your favorite Zandalari combo render and use Black Claw, then Hunting Party. The first round is only okay, but after that it really kicks into high gear. Problem solved. Next is Aquatic. I'm using my Ghost Shark with huge sharp teeth, Ghostly Bite and Dive, a Sea Calf with Water Jet, Bubble, and Blood in the Water, and third is my new Lagan Eel with Deep Bite, Dodge, and Dive. A Slithershock Elver would also work, assuming that your breed sports more than 263 speed, which mine regrettably does not. Starting with the Ghost Shark, use Dive, then Ghostly Bite. Sure, you stun yourself, but he's recovering over there for at least one of those rounds, so we're good. After Ghostly Bite, you pass your stun round and use huge sharp teeth twice before your Ghost Shark double dies. Bring in the Sea Calf and use Blood in the Water, then Bubble, and then start spamming Water Jet. His bleed falls off before we get Blood in the Water back up, so we can just stick to Water Jet until the Sea Calf dies. Out comes my eel, so I'll use Dive, then Dodge, and then Deep Bite three times. Repeat that cycle one more time, Dive, then Dodge, and then Deep Biting. Those early bites just tickled, but by the end, we are really quite chompy. Next, we'll do Critter. I'm using the Dark Moon Rabbit, and it is key that it's a Dark Moon Rabbit set up with huge sharp teeth, dodge, and burrow, a sneaky marmot with jab, blinding powder, and smoke bomb, and a Dark Moon Hatchling with trample and predatory strike. This one is kinda long, so buckle up. Starting with the bunny, use dodge, then teeth, and then switch to the marmot. Use blinding powder, and then jab three times, and then blinding powder again. Switch to the Dark Moon Hatchling. Use trample three times, and then switch back to the rabbit. We'll use burrow, then dodge, then huge sharp teeth three times. Burrow again, and then dodge, and then huge sharp teeth again until your rabbit finally dies. He's about to cannon, so I'll bring in the marmot and use a quick blinding powder. Swap to the Dark Moon Hatchling, and seeing as he's below a quarter health, predatory strike. I knew I kept that lanky purple bird around for a reason. Next, we've got Elemental. I'm using a Pandaren Water Spirit with Water Jet, Dive, and Geyser, a Ruby Droplet with Absorb, Bubble, and Drain Blood, and third is a Nightshade Sproutling with more than 263 speed using Lash and Blinding Poison. That Sproutling could be swapped out for a Forest Sprout with over 263 speed with Refuge, or even the Bound Stream with Dive. Starting with the Water Spirit, I'll use Dive, and then Geyser, and then Water Jet twice. I swap in my Ruby Droplet and use Bubble, and then Drain Blood for the damage, and Absorb. Switch back to the Water Spirit. Geyser again, and then Dive, and then Water Jet one more time before the Spirit's done. Bring back the Droplet and use Absorb, then Bubble, then Absorb again. For a bit more damage, and to wait out the Bubble cooldown, I'll swap in my third pet and use Lash, then Blinding Poison, and then spam Lash. My Nightshade doesn't quite finish it off, but he does eat the cannon, leaving my Droplet to Drain Blood and seal the deal with Absorb. He's still got all his health points, look at that! Next is Humanoid. I'm using a Sister of Temptation with Agony, Curse of Doom, and Lovestruck, and second is Squirky with Punch, Stampede, and Bubble. I threw a little Bad Wolf in third, but didn't need it. Starting with the Sister, use Lovestruck, then Curse of Doom, and then Agony. She dies to the cannon, at which point we'll bring out Squirky. Use Bubble, and then Stampede. Stampede itself is doing weak damage, but that 100% damage taken debuff affects both the end of the Agony and the Curse of Doom, which is really nice. After Stampede, two good punches finishes the fight. Next, we'll do Mechanical. I am, for possibly the first time ever, using a Rabid Nut Varmint with Rabid Strike, second is my Pocket Cannon with Explode, and third is my favorite Dark Moon Zeppelin with Missile and Decoy. Starting with that rascally nut varmint, spam Rabid Strike until it won't let you anymore. In my experience, you get 4. Roll in the pocket cannon and pick any damage shot. Press it twice for one shot, and then use Explode while he's still got that Rabid debuff. On the Zeppelin, throw up your decoy and start spamming Missile. It never lets me down. Next, we've got Dragonkin. First slot is the Twilight Clutch Sister with Tail Sweep, Phase Shift, and Twilight Meteorite. Second and third slots are my Nether Fairy Dragon and Sprite Darter Hatchling respectively, both with over 263 speed and set up with Arcane Blast, Evanescence, and Moonfire. Start with that Clutch Sister and use Phase Shift, and then Meteorite, and then Tail Sweep three times. Use Phase Shift, and then Tail Sweep, and then one last Twilight Meteorite before the Clutch Sister dies. Bring in a Fairy Dragon and use Evanescence, then Moonfire, then three Arcane Blasts. Again, Evanescence, Moonfire, and Arcane Blast away. When your first dragon dies and the second one comes out, follow that same pattern. Evanescence, Moonfire, Arcane Blast 3 times, or as many as it takes for him to keel over already. Next is Flying, and I bet you've heard this song before. First slot is a Skyfin pet with Wild Magic, and second is Icky with Savage Talon, Black Claw, and Flock. Start with the Skyfin and lay down Wild Magic, then heroically eat the cannon with your finny little body. Bring in Icky and use Black Claw, and then Flock. That almost does it, but before you go AFK, hit Savage Talon at least once to really polish things off. Next up is Magic. I'm dusting off my Nightmare Bell and setting it up with Shadow Shock and Dark Rebirth. Second is the Lofty Librem or another book pet, more than 263 speed, and take Shadow Shock, Amp Magic, and Curse of Doom. Any third pet will do. I slung along my Twilight Fiendling, but your favorite Surge of Power pet is also a safe just-in-case bet. Starting with the Bell, use Shadow Shock 4 times, and then Dark Rebirth. Shadow Shock another 3 times before you lose your Bell. On the book, use Curse of Doom, and then Amp Magic, and then start mashing the Shadow Shocks. The magic racial is almost always underwhelming, but versus these cannon pets, it feels like cheating. Last is Undead. I'm using my Unborn Valkyr with Curse of Doom and Unholy Ascension, and second is a Restless Shadeling featuring more than 263 speed with Shadow Shock, Plagued Blood, and Phase Shift. That could be easily swapped for a Ghastly Kid with Diseased Bite and Ethereal. The third slot can be any undead pet. I brought a Ghost Maggot and included Survival just in case. On the Valkyr, use Curse of Doom and then Unholy Ascension. The Shadeling is about to do a lot of work over here. Go Plagued Blood, and then Phase Shift, and then Shadow Shock 6 times. You really just Shadow Shock him to death, if we're being honest. So that's Family Fighter Pilfer. Thank you so much for watching. Subscribe for the rest of the Family Fighter guides and other super cool WoW videos. Let me know what you think. Share your own strategies in the comments if you like, and have a wonderful, wonderful day. Bye.
Ludra the Mage here.
And I'm Ben the Mage.
Ben, there's a travesty in this world. Azeroth has done a grave injustice.
Wait, is this that Horde versus Alliance stuff again? Look, I told you, I'm out. It is just not happening with me.
No, Ben. No. This is far worse. You see, our new race friends do not have new racial pets.
Wait, is this like something they decided on, or is it just an oversight? What's going on?
They're nowhere to be found! None! Not a word! Not even a whisper! About where their new vendor pets are, Ben! I'm so sad for them! I'm so sad!
Okay, that's it. I'm gonna protest this. Here, hold my beer.
While Ben is off protesting the injustice, that is, non-representation, tune into Battle Pets episode 123, where we discuss this grave oversight, ponder ideas about what could have been, or still could be, and discuss other various goings-ons in Azeroth.
Okay, I'm back. You won't believe how simple that was.
What did you do? Is it fixed already?
I took a number. Now I just have to wait for my turn, and they shall hear of my mighty wrath.
Now, Carla, number 23.
Sweet! Only 154 more to go.
Remember the time, baby. Ain't got no epics. Ain't got no achievements, cause I ain't first rate. I can't even claim next Rammus. But you know I'ma be your favorite groupmate. Invite me, girl.
Oh, baby, it's alright now, you don't have to bother me. Everything's fine, ballet nights and soft 3D. Lorraine's a foreign, I don't wanna PvP. Cut the rain till we get it right. Nothing left to do, let's do something new, so come meet me at Ulduar.
Nothing left to do, waiting in the queue, but I don't want any Ulduar. Fancy schmancy epic mount. We can't go nowhere heroic.
It don't matter, cause there is really nothing left. Where are we going, girl?
Oh, baby, it's alright now, you don't have to bug on me. Everything's normally nice and softly deep. The rain's the pour and I don't wanna be VP. Let the rain till we get it right. Nothing left to do, let's do something new, so come meet me at Ulduwa.
Nothing left to do, I'm in the queue, but I don't want any Ulduwa. Got heroic raids, I do alliance raids. Listen, Summer Gale. Hop in my mechano hog and we'll never log. So listen, Summer Gale. Want you PvP with me, we're gonna pwn your seat. So listen, Summer Gale. In the gank and you won't go back. You won't go back, yeah.
That was Ulduar by Cranius and Summergale, one of my all-time favorite WoW songs, because, well, not only because Ulduar is my all-time favorite raid in WoW, but it's just such an awesome song. It's quite old and many of you already know it probably, but can you ever really get enough of Ulduar? And my wish has been heard, my plea to get Ulduar as our time-walking Wrath of the Lich King dungeon. So I'm pretty happy with how this turned out. Let's see what the next time-walking dungeon is going to be. Are we going to see a, like, vanilla time-walking event? That would be a thing, just speculating. I'm really interested in seeing what that might be, if it's going to be like Molten Core, because we already had the 40-man version and they did some work on that raid dungeon already. It might be easier for them to convert it to a full-on time-walking raid than any of the others where they haven't done any work at all yet. So yeah, I could go along with a Molten Core. I could just as easily go along with, say, AQ40. That would be awesome too. But anyway, Battle for Azeroth brings us the Allied Races, and I found a video on YouTube by Noble87 that goes into the lore of Moira Thorazan, formerly known as Moira Bronzebeard. Sure, I might as well go and play this now, because the Dark Iron Dwarves, of which she is the leader, are going to be one of the allied races, even though we only get them once Battle for Azeroth has gone live. Or maybe we can start it at the pre-patch, I don't know, but like something around that time, at the earliest the pre-patch, I would think. But anyway, here is Noble with the story of Moira Thorazan.
Hello everyone! With Battle for Azeroth, the Dark Iron Dwarves are going to join the Alliance as one of the allied races. With that in mind, I thought it'd be a good idea to sit down and talk about the story of their leader, Moira Thorazan, daughter of Magni Bronzebeard Speaker and member of the Council of Three Hammers.
You stand before Moira, Queen Regent of the Dark Iron Clan. Watch your tongue.
Before we dive into her story, first a bit of background on the history of the dwarves and the separation of the clans. Once upon a time, all three dwarven clans, Bronzebeard, Wildhammer and Dark Iron, they all lived together within Ironforge under the rule of High King Modimus Envomar. Thane Madoran Bronzebeard, he was the head of the Bronzebeard clan, the largest of the three factions, claiming to share distant blood with the High King. They formed the bulk of Ironforge military and mercantile classes. Thane Cardross Wildhammer. He led the Wildhammer clan. They gained authority as adept and incredibly resilient mountaineers. Considered uncouth, lacking good manners and refinements by the Bronzebeard clan, the Wildhammers struggled to gain more sway with High King Modimus and to solidify their place amongst the ruling elite of Ironforge. Then, Sorcerer Thane Faurusan, he ruled the Dark Iron clan, who had a long-standing practice of dabbling in sorcery, along with secrecy and political scheming which drew the ire of Ironforge's other inhabitants. He held firm control over the kingdom's richest gem and mineral deposits, using his wealth as leverage to protect his people and secure a place in Ironforge's increasing volatile political arena. Tensions between the clans were high, and while Modimus tried his best to treat each clan with fairness and respect, he was unable to ease these tensions, which ultimately led to disaster. Around 230 years before the Dark Portal opened up, Modimus passed away of old age, and the War of Three Hammers ignited between the three clans. No one knows exactly who struck the first blow, but bloody battles raged in every corner of the kingdom for many long and terrible years. In the end, the Bronzebeard clan used its martial expertise to drive the Wildhammer and Dark Ida from the mountain, and they were the ones who claimed total victory. Cardross and the Wildhammer clan, they admitted defeat and moved north to build a new home of Grimbatol, one that soon rivaled even Ironforge in scope and prestige. Their defeat, it was hard to swallow, and it weighed heavy on Cardross' shoulders, but with time, they accepted their fate and prospered in their new home. Faurusan and his Dark Irons, they moved south to Red Ridge Mountains and founded the new kingdom of Faurusan, named after their leader. They too prospered in their new home, but for their leader, the humiliation of defeat, it was unbearable. After years of secretly forging a brand new army, Faurusan launched a brazen two-pronged assault against both the Bronzebeard and the Wildhammer clans. He himself led the assault against the Bronzebeards, pushing all the way to the very heart of the city, before the Bronzebeards finally rallied together and pushed the Dark Irons back, all the way back to Red Ridge. Meanwhile, his wife Motgut led their second attack against Grimbatol with the blade Zalatov in hand. They brought Grimbatol's shadows to life, falling upon the Wildhammers with blades forged of night. By some feat of courage, Cardross rallied his remaining warriors, and they launched a desperate counterattack. The sorceress unleashed her dark powers on Cardross, but he pressed his attack. Then Motgut reached for her black blade, the weapon that had turned Grimbatol into a den of nightmare, but it was no longer there. She had lost her cherished weapon Zalatov, or as some would claim, the weapon had abandoned her. All the same, Cardross mortally wounded Motgut and secured victory for the Wildhammers. With her death, the remaining Dark Irons retreated south, only to find themselves face to face with the armies of Ironforge. Madoran had caught wind of the attack and he brought his forces north. Together they stood, Bronzebeard and Wildhammer, and they crushed the Dark Irons from both sides. In the Dark Irons, the other two clans had found a common enemy, and they decided to put their rivalry to the side and focus on purging Faurusan and those treacherous Dark Irons from the face of the world. As their armies drew near, Faurusan scrambled to find some way to defeat his enemies. He decided to draw the fiery power from deep within the world and use that as a weapon. He wove a great spell to save his kingdom, yet during his conjuration, his mind turned to the death of his wife and his recent defeats. Anger roiled through Faurusan's heart. His rage grew so absolute that his spellwork breached the elemental plane and tapped into Ragnaros the Fire Lord.
By fire be purged!
Unwittingly, he ripped Ragnaros from his elemental prison and he summoned him to the surface of the world. The violent rebirth sparked a series of apocalyptic explosions that instantly killed the Sorcerer Thane and shattered the surrounding mountains. From a safe distance, Madoran and Cardross, they watched in horror as the world was torn asunder and firestorms engulfed the area. They knew, in that instant, that Faurusan had doomed himself and his people. Frightened for their own safety, the Wildhammers and the Bronzebeards, they turned north and fled. Ironforge was eventually rebuilt, and Madoran actually invited the Wildhammers to stay with them since Grimbatol had now become a cursed place upon Motgut's death, and they didn't want to go back there. Instead, they declined the offer, and they set out to build a home in the Hinterlands. The Dark Irons didn't have that luxury, as Ragnaros' rebirth had decimated Red Ridge, and a raging volcano, known as Blackrock Mountain, it now towered over the ruined Dark Iron Kingdom. From his lair, the Molticore, he enslaved the surviving Dark Irons, who carved a brand new fortress under the mountain, which they called Shadowfort City. Within their fiery home, they would continue nursing their hatred of the Wildhammers and the Bronzebeards, while also serving their new Lord Ragnaros. They did so dutifully for centuries, even when a dark portal did finally open up and the orcs tried to settle in the mountain. Under the influence of the old gods, Ragnaros and the forces, they gave them a portion of the mountain. But as most of you know, the Horde would eventually be defeated and the dark portal would be closed. Not all orcs were captured or killed though. Some of them remained behind, causing problems. Amongst them were the Blackrock orcs. Lakeshire's magistrate Straight Solomon, he sent envoys to Ida Forge, pleading with King Magni Bronzebeard for assistance. His daughter, Princess Moira Bronzebeard, she volunteered to help, but as they were making their way through Blackrock Mountain, across the burning steps, they ran into an ambush. This information we learn from Karen Mighthammer, a survivor of that escort imprisoned within Blackrock Depths. He tells us that it must have been 100 of them. Dark Iron Dwarves. They swarmed them, overwhelmed the guards and the few brave heroes that had agreed to assist them on the mission. One thing was clear, this was a highly orchestrated ambush. It was as if they knew every move they would make before they made them. He suspects that someone tipped them off, but he doesn't know who. All he knows is that Moira now resides at the side of Emperor Dagran Fauruzan, who has her under some sort of powerful thought-altering spell. We take that information back to Magni Bronzebeard, who is of course not happy to hear this. Dagran has him and the Kingdom of Idaforge at his mercy, and we are their only hope. The king asks of us to go into Blackrock Depths and save his daughter Moira. There's only one way to make sure that the spell Fauruzan has cast on her, that the spell is broken, and the only way is by killing him. And so, we went in and we took his life. Heroes ventured forth and made sure not to kill Moira, even though she still used her abilities against us, while we took out the Emperor of the Dark Iron Dwarves. Now despite Moira seemingly looking like a slave, hanging out in a Princess Leia's outfit, that's not exactly how it is. She weeps over the loss of her husband, tears across her face, she asks us,
"Why? Fauruzan was a great and honorable dwarf? You ruined my life! And the life of my unborn child. Return to Ironforge and tell my father that the heir to the kingdom of Ironforge will be a dark iron dwarf. Whether he approve or not, it shall be."
The king is upset about this news, but we would later find out that the relationship between Moira and Dagran, despite what Magni might have thought, it was not one of enslavement. In fact, Magni himself wasn't the best father in the world, even though he might have wanted to be. He was never able to get over his disappointments of Moira being born a woman instead of the son that he had truly wanted. He could never believe that she might not want to stay where she's constantly being reminded that she'd failed him simply by being born. In his mind, the only way she could have possibly fallen in love with a dark iron dwarf was if her husband had enchanted her. He had, in a way, he enchanted her with the concept of respect. Of having people listen to her when she spoke. Of believing that she could rule even as a female and rule well. The Dark Irons welcomed her where her own father had dismissed her. That is the only magic Dagran Fauruzan and the Dark Irons had used on her. Which makes you wonder if she was the one who tipped him off during the escort in which she was kidnapped. And why we caught her in such an outfit. Now, I'm not shaming anyone here. Who doesn't like a little bit of roleplay now and then? Regardless, Moira is not happy with her father. And she now leads the Dark Irons by herself. Time passed on, Ragnaros was defeated and sent back to the elemental plane of fire, and around the period of the cataclysm, with Deathwing breaking out of the world, Azeroth itself was already shaking. Floods, droughts, earthquakes, the world was in pain, and Magni, he decided to use an ancient Titan ritual to try and communicate with the land, figure out what is going on. Instead of just communicating with the land though, he became one with it, turned into a crystal, leaving Idaforge without a ruler. Perfect opportunity for Moira and the Dark Iron Dwarves to show up a few weeks later, and she claims the throne. After all, it was a legitimate claim. She was the only surviving heir. She even outranked Muradin and Bran. There was nothing that anyone could do. But Moira did not just seize the throne, she also decided to place all of Ironforge under lockdown. The Griffins were said to be ill and were placed in quarantine. The Deep Run Trem was said to be broken, and even the Magi within the city were no longer safe. No one went in or out, not even Prince Anduin Rin, who was visiting Ironforge at the time, and had now become her hostage, or at least that's what Moira thought. In truth, Anduin actually held a Hearthstone, which he used to teleport to Feramore. He informed his father and Jaina of what was going on, and the King of Stormwind was pissed. Her claim to the throne, that might be legit, but what she was doing to Ironforge, what she had done to his child, that was not alright. Publicly, they pretended to be as baffled as Moira would want them to be, while Varian gathered members of the SI7 for mission. They planned to infiltrate Ironforge through the shut-down Deep Run Trem and forcefully remove Moira from her stolen throne. When Anduin finds out about these plans from Jaina, he tells her that she must send her back to Ironforge. Of course, the mage refuses at first. This 13-year-old heir to Stormwind should not be sent in the middle of danger. The prince does his best to convince her. If his father carries out this attack, then a whole lot of people are going to die, and the succession will be thrown into confusion. Instead of coming together as a people, the dwarves are going to find themselves in the midst of another civil war. He has to go and try to stop him, make him understand that there is another way. Anduin's words are eventually able to convince her. A quick portal later, and Anduin found himself in Ironforge, just in time to stop his father from making a big mistake, as he had dragged Moira out of her bed into the open area near the forge, where crowds were starting to gather. He hauled her to him roughly with one arm. His other hand was at her throat, pressing the sword against the pale flesh. "This throne is not yours. You bought it with deceit and lies and trickery. You have threatened your own subjects when they have done nothing wrong and bullied your way to a title you have not yet earned. I will not see you sit upon this stolen throne one moment longer." Prince Anduin, once more the voice of reason, shared wisdom and truth with his father. Despite what he might want, Moira was the rightful heir. His father was not some vigilante. Destruction was easy, but creating something good, something right, something that lasts, that was hard. Varian wanted nothing more than to make the usurper pay for what she had done to his boy, but they had to think of what was best for the people of Ironforge. In the end, his son was able to calm down the wolf, and Varian told Moira that she had to be better than what she was right now. She needed more than just a bloodline to rule her people. She was going to have to earn it. He shoved her away. She staggered back, but made no attempt to flee. How could she? She was encircled by the populace of the city that she had tried to rule with a cruel, arrogant hand. She had shown that she was incapable of ruling Ironforge by herself, so Varian came up with a plan of letting all clans be represented. The Council of Three Hammers, with Dark Iron, Bronzebeard, and the Wildhammer clan, each of them having a voice in the city. Instead of bleeding her life out here on the floor of the High Seat, she was given a second chance to prove that she is ready to lead the dwarves. Moira said nothing, only looked around with wide, fearful eyes. She looked like nothing more than a scared little girl standing there in her nightgown. The people, however, they started cheering at the idea, and under the watchful eye of Stormwind, the council was formed. Moira Faurisson would represent the Dark Iron clan, Muradin Bronzebeard was represented the Bronzebeard clan, and the Wildhammers at first were represented by Curdren Wildhammer. Of course, this was a massive political change for the dwarves, who after centuries of living apart, now had to work together once again. Coming together like that, it did not come without complications. The clans did not trust each other, they came from different backgrounds, and it wasn't easy for them to get along. To bring their people together, Moira suggested that they should reforge the Hammer of the High King, also known as Modimus's Hammer. An ancient scroll had showed up, describing how the hammer had been split into three different pieces after the king passed away. The clans then separated, and each clan came into possession of one of the fragments. Moira and Muradin, they were on board with this plan. It seemed like a good symbolic way of reforging the old alliances, but Curdren was not willing to give up his piece of the artifact. During his time in Outlands, as they were fighting demons and orcs, this piece of home gave them hope, reminded them of who they were, and he did not want to give it up. Discussions and debates followed amongst the council and their people, up to the point where the dwarves started to attack each other. After one Bronzebeard dwarf and one Wildhammer dwarf killed each other in a brawl, Curdren realized that for the sake of his people, he had to give up his artifacts. He had no choice, so he placed it down and he agreed to their plan. Eventually, they figured out that the scroll that showed up, that it was actually fake, and that their plans are built on lies. By this point, it doesn't matter though, for their people it had become a truth, and to back away from the plan now, that would just cause more trouble than to go through with it. Curdren, however, he wasn't having it. It was a mistake for him to have ever come to Ironforge. A fire had taken the life of his griffin Skyri. The city had stripped him of nearly everything that he once was, everything that he once knew, but had not taken his one piece of the artifact just yet. So it was that he went to steal it back, and he was caught in the act by Moira. A calculated smile was on her face, as Curdren figured out that it was Moira who had forged the documents, manipulated events, kept the rumors within Ironforge going. Curdren even went as far as to blame her for the fire that has taken his friend's life, but Moira told him that she had nothing to do with it. All she wanted was Curdren and the Wildhammers out. They had never been willing to extend a hand of peace to the Dark Irons. Their opinions were already fixed when they arrived, clouded by old hatreds. She did what she did for the future, so that when her son inherits this throne, he will not rule over a city that treats him like a pariah due to the blood that flows through his veins.
In time, my son shall rule the Dark Irons, and perhaps all Ironforge as well.
She had outmaneuvered Curdren, and as sweat started pouring down his body, he shoved the scepter through an opening in his chest piece near his arm. With the heirloom hidden, he rushed out of the room and towards the gates of Ironforge as the city's stone walls closed in. Outside, he ran into Muradin, and another discussion followed. The Bronzebeard didn't believe that fighting over the ancient relics, that it was worth it. The heart of Curdren's clan, it was not in this scepter. It was in himself, in his people, in Skyri. In the end, Muradin gave the other dwarf a good punch across the face, which smacked some sense into him. All at once, he felt foolish for taking the scepter from the high seat. What exactly did he intend to do with it? Leave the city and forsake his duties as a member of the council, tarnishing not only his own honor, but that of Falstad and the rest of the clan as well. He knew what he had to do, regardless of the consequences, to honor King Magni and fulfill his own duties as a member of the Council of Three Hammers. The brilliant plan that Curdren came up with was to show up at the ceremony of reforging, where Moira was explaining to the crowd that it was a thief who had stolen a piece of the artifacts. They had the suspicions regarding who stole the handle, and an investigation would take place, but they would not allow thieves to disrupt what they had set out to do. Curdren stepped up to the plate, told all present that it was he who had taken it, and Muradin asked if he'd gone mad. He was going to start a riot. Curdren had not gone mad, though. He told them all that it was foolish to reforge the weapon as a symbol of the current union to try to get back to the Ironforge of their ancestors. This is a new Ironforge. It will never be one of the past, and reforging Modimus's hammer surely will not change that. He slammed his artifact down, and with his mighty storm hammer, he shattered it. The dwarves in the crowd froze in sudden bewilderment. Confusion rippled across their faces. The new Ironforge begins here. Ask yourselves, do you want to start it by putting this hammer back together so that one day it can be broken again? The Wildhammers have chosen to take a step forward, not back. Who among you is with us? Muradin was the first to join him as he smashed his piece as well, and even Moira, who now herself had been politically outmaneuvered, she was forced to join them, shattering the lie and breaking the way for a new future for all of the clans. Curdren decides that his place is not with the council. That spot actually belongs to Falstad, who has been their leader for 20 years until Curdren had returned from Outlands, brashly taking over as if all those years of service meant nothing. He would follow his own destiny as Falstad joined Moira and Muradin on the council. This change to the council and the shattering of the planned ritual, it was but one of the many obstacles that the three dwarven leaders faced. Dark Iron dwarves attacked the Ironforge airfields, which doesn't help the council, of course, but as it turns out, that was actually the Twilight's Hammer, and Ambassador Slaghammer is quickly arrested for treason. It seems like Moira is now actually doing her best to be a part of this council, no longer trying to seize power with force or political deception, and when Varian shows up to ask aid for the campaign against the Horde during Mr. Pandaria, she was the one who stepped up.
Once upon a time, moments ago in fact, a great king sought help from a trio of powerful dwarves, the Council of Three Hammers. The king's scouts had discovered that Zandalari trolls threatened the dwarven capital. Surely the king thought if he helped them with their troll problem, they would give him more troops for his campaign against the Horde. But what the king did not realize is that the dwarves did not trust one another. "We cannot help you," said the Bronzebeard dwarf. "For if we turn our back on the Dark Irons, they will defeat the Wildhammer and take over Ironforge." "We cannot help you," said the Wildhammer dwarf. "For if we turn our back on the Dark Irons, they will defeat the Bronzebeard and take over Ironforge." Oh, the king was furious. "If none of you help, then Ironforge will fall under siege." Only one dwarf offered to help the king, We will lend you our strength, said Moira of the Dark Iron. We will trust our dwarven brothers, and we will show them what loyalty means. And so Moira and the High King set out into the snow to save the city, leaving the others to think about their actions. What happens next? I must know.
This is where my agents tracked the Zandalari.
Ugh, Shimmer Ridge. I know it well. The Frostmane trolls breed and plot atop that snowblown mesa.
I can only imagine what foul business the Zandalari have with them.
We've lost many mountaineers to this freakish storm, or the trolls slithering about in it.
Yes, this weather is not natural.
Aye, I am loath to send my men into that. It reeks of ambush and bloody disaster.
My champions will go. They will see what can be done, and rescue who they can.
If they can stop that storm, I'll lead the Forge Guard to the top myself.
It's heartening to see you here, Moira. You have my thanks.
Indeed. With the aid of your champions, the Dark Irons will put an end to the Zandalari threat in Dunmarrow. We will prove our loyalty to the Council, Ironforge, and the Alliance here today, and with our own blood.
Farewell, Queen Regent.
I'll see you when it's done, King of Stormwind.
Muradin and Falstead, they still don't trust Moira and the Dark Iron Dwarves, but she's dedicated to proving the worth of not only herself, but also her clan. She wants to carve out a future for her people and her son that will one day rule, so she decides to show the right way and join Varian on his mission against the trolls.
The King's champions have done it. The storm has ended. Forward, Dark Irons! To battle we march!
You may have stopped the storm, but you cannot stop the will of Zandalar. You will die here. All of you. There will be more. Zandalar will never fall.
Well fought. I see the Dark Irons are as formidable as ever.
That they are, King Varian. And at the service of the Alliance, I might add.
For that, I'm glad. The Bronzebeards and Wildhammers will regret not having been here to share in your glory.
Better they're grateful for the clansmen spared death on this miserable hillock. We sought to protect and impress, not to shame.
Well, you've done just that. Come, let us return to Ironforge and announce your victory to the Council.
The High King, his champions, and the Dark Iron Dwarves worked together to save Ironforge. The other Dwarven leaders were ashamed of their behavior and vowed never again to allow fear or distrust to cloud their judgment. And so it was a human king who helped to unite the Dwarven clans so long divided. Free to trust one another, all three Dwarven leaders pledged their full strength to the Alliance cause.
Quite the change from holding a knife to her throat, and Moira would even show up during the Siege of Orgrimmar to help out. Well, at least they try.
Ugh, oh, that was a fun ride. Heroes, I salute you. There's something right foul in these chambers below the city.
Oh, look! You're the ones that smashed up my juggernaut. Let's see how you like the newest addition to the War Chief's arsenal, the Iron Star!
Oof, that looks dangerous. Get in there, boys, and show him what we're made of. A right deadly machine that is. Best watch your step down here, heroes.
Still, the world was able to kick Garrosh out of the mantle of Warchief, and they placed him on a trial, a trial which Moira was present at, but didn't play a massive role. Then one day, 4 years after her father went through the ritual and turned into a crystal, she was asked by Myrddin and some of the priests to go and talk to him. They say that hearing her voice might wake him up, but to her, it all seems like a fool's errand. A ruler must keep up appearances though, and in a chamber with her father, she wonders if it would have made any difference if she'd been born a right and proper heir. A son. If he could see her now, the daughter he never wanted sitting on his throne, it would eat him up inside, wouldn't it? The time had come for the King of Diamonds to wake up and be the speaker for the Titan spirit inside the world. When he underwent the ritual, he became one with the lands, and she's been showing him visions of the Legion's coming. The King waking up, it first worries the Council. This could mess up everything that they've worked for, that they've bled for. This city, by all laws under the mountain, is still Magni's, but Moira believes that times have changed. This is a city for all free clans now, and she's more than willing to fight for it to make sure that it stays that way. Thankfully, that won't be needed, as Magni did not return as a king, but as a servant to something much greater. He tells them to get the people ready for the coming of the Legion, as he sets out to warn the rest of the Alliance. Outside of Ironforge, he and Moira have a little moment, as he thanks her for seeing him off.
Thank you for seeing me off, lass. Didn't think you'd agree to it.
You are my father, and the ruler.
Must keep up appearances. That's why you visited me in Old Ironforge, eh?
You heard me.
And I couldn't be prouder of what you've become. I failed you as a father before, and I'll never forgive myself for that. And I'm not asking you to forgive me either. But if even stone can come to life, if even three rival clans can live under one roof, then maybe we can be a family again. That is, if you'll give me another chance. Think it over, lass. I don't expect an answer now. Just know that wherever this journey takes me, I'll be watching you through the stones.
No words are spoken by Moira, only tears streaking across her face as her father's journey that would take him all the way to Argus and back. Hers was first to defend the Moreau against the Legion's assault, and later, after the battle at the Broken Shore and the death of Varian, she attended his funeral and can sympathize with Anduin. She knows what it's like to lose a father, to lose a king, as she sends a double agent to help Shadow Priests with obtaining their artifacts, and after doing so, she joins them at the Order Hall together with Velen and Alonso's Fall. At Netherlight Temple, she assists us with bringing the Naru Sara back to the light, as well as the entire campaign of preparing for Belnazar's attack. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Moira Bronzebeard's, or now Fauruzan's, story. From a daughter that wasn't appreciated by her father, to ruler of the Dark Iron Dwarves, and working very hard and carving out a future for her son. Her journey has not been one without mistakes, but she's extremely clever in the ways of politics, and also a priest to be reckoned with. Perhaps Battle for Azeroth will make some time to have her interact with Magni a little bit more, to see if there's a possibility to mend those old wounds further. When you think about what position she would take in the Alliance when it comes to this brand new conflict, I'd say that she's very devoted to the Council of the Hammers, with her main goal being to carve out a future for her child. If going to war with the Horde would strengthen their position, would strengthen their dream for the future, then I'd imagine that she'd be right there on the front lines.
Forward, Dark Irons! To battle we march!
For the Dark Irons, as an allied race, we don't really know a lot about how they're going to join. The introduction of some of the other races that we've seen, they take place in the current day and age, but I would personally find it really, really cool if they actually let us go back in time and witness, for example, the War of the Hammers, or maybe show us more about the days of enslavement to Ragnaros the Fire Lord. A bit more history behind the Dark Iron Dwarves shown in-game, Modgut perhaps with Zalatov and Grimbatol. That would absolutely be amazing. To be fair though, I think it's going to be more in the present day and age, but time will tell, I suppose. For now, this is the end of our story, so as always, thank you very much for watching, everyone. If you're interested in some more information about all the things that we talked about today, then check out the related Wild article in the description down below. Before I forget, a big thank you to Charm for once again offering her voice to voice act. This time she was the lovely Moira. And Virgilis, one of my very own guildies, who offered his lovely Scottish accent. Can you believe that whenever I raid, I can actually listen to that voice? Both of you, thank you so much for joining me on this video. Subscribe if you like my videos. Leave a like if you enjoyed this one. And until next time, guys. See ya!
New boss after new boss falls before my regroup, so it's time we're looking up. the DPS interrupts every cast, dodge and bombs before they erupt. Run over and damage the boss, and that's what they owe me. Slowly work to transition, getting healed up. Take off and debuffs to two stacks and rotate position. And the lead is like, someone please get in the pod. Target the boss and hit one repeatedly. Pressure 2 on CD. Debuff the stacking, heal him please, and swap someone else's turn. Stack with the group and focus when you return. Come on now, it's time to burn. Come on now, it's time to burn. It's the Antar in high command, dropping bombs wherever you stand. We're switching focus on demand. Focus Admiral Spyrax. Watch health when the pod is manned. Don't let the ads get out of hand. And we're hoping everything will go as planned. Focus Admiral Spyrax. Focus Admiral Spyrax. Focus Admiral Spyrax. Focus Admiral Spyrax. And we're hoping everything will go as planned. The Antar and high command. One phase in and we're moving again, but the pod does something new. If you wanna save your raid from death from fusillade, spawn a fell shield emitter with two. When at the third phase, it's okay, get a new ability to clear the ground of some mines. So keep the DPS heavy and you'll see who's ready to make it around one more time. And the lead is like, someone please get in the pod. Target the boss and hit one repeatedly. Pressure 2 on CD. Debuff is stacking, heal him please, and swap someone else's turn. Stack with the group and focus when you return. Come on now, it's time to burn. Come on now, it's time to burn. It's the Antar in high command, dropping bombs wherever you stand. We're switching focus on demand. Focus engineer Ishtar. Watch health when the pod is manned. Don't let the ads get out of hand. And we're hoping everything will go as planned. Focus engineer Ishkar. Focus engineer Ishkar. Focus engineer Ishkar. Focus engineer Ishkar. And we're hoping everything will go as planned. It's the Antar and high command. Come on, focus ads now, come on. Come on, focus boss now, come on. Come on, focus ads now, come on. Come on, focus boss now, come on. Come on, focus ads now, come on. Come on, focus boss now, come on. Come on, focus ads now, come on. Come on, focus boss now, come on. It's the Antar and high command, dropping bombs wherever you stand. We're switching focus on demand. Focus General Arodas. Watch health when the pod is manned. Don't let the ads get out of hand. And we're hoping everything will go as planned. Focus General Arodas.
Come on, focus boss now, come on. Come on,
focus Admiral Spyrax.
Come on, focus ads now, come on. Come on,
focus Engineer Ishtar.
Come on, focus ads now, come on. Come on,
focus General Arodas. And we're hoping everything will go as planned. It's the Antar in high command.
That was Silvela Tomy with her rendition of the fight against the Antar in high command. I think for the moment I have like a new favorite song. Like, I'm not sure, but I really, really like this song. Alright, so this brings us to the end of episode 37. I hope that you've had as much fun listening as I've had selecting the segments and songs for you to listen to. As always, I want to thank the contributors of the episode today, which are Slightly Impressive, Kavo350, Hazelnutty Games, Granius, Summergal, Noble87, Silvela Tomy, and of course Patty Madsen for her amazing intros and outro to our show. Thank you very much, Patty. Now I've got one more segment for you. Since we started with a small problem with Paladins from Slightly Impressive, I have the opposite, so to speak, segment to end the show today, which is Slightly Impressive's problems with Warlocks. Not that there ever would be any, I'm not aware of any, but yeah, that's it. As always, if you have questions, suggestions, or if you have content of yourself that you would like featured on Corps Run Radio, don't be shy. Tweet us at Corps Run Radio, write us an email at corpsrunradiomail@gmail.com, and we'll see what we can do. Like I said before, I've really enjoyed myself while putting together the show today. Not only because we had the exclusive song by Kavo, but generally it's nice to find these great segments by great artists and great content creators generally to present to you. And with that, have a great week. Enjoy the newly started Lunar Festival, and I'll see you next time. Bye, guys.
Okay, everyone, ready to go? Those Murlocs aren't going to kill themselves.
Yep, ready to go.
Who's your friend?
Oh, that's just my pet.
He looks more like a person than a pet.
Well, I'm not sure if demons are technically people or not.
Demons? What kind of a mage are you?
Oh, right. Yeah, about that.
How did you get a pet demon anyway?
Oh, it's pretty easy, really. You just summon one from another dimension and magically enslave it to your will.
Dude, all that just to fight some Murlocs?
Yeah, that seems slightly more evil than overfishing or whatever the Murlocs are doing.
No, it's fine. Look at him. He's perfectly happy. Right, buddy?
He'll cut you all into 1,000 pieces.
He's just kidding. What a comedian, this one.
He'll rip your souls from your mortal bodies.
Okay, I like to think I'm a pretty open-minded person, but I have to say I'm a little uncomfortable with this.
Yeah, let's say, just hypothetically, that you left your murderous demon slave at home for this one. What else could you do to help?
Oh, I'm extremely adept at using magic to kill things as slowly and painfully as possible.
Okay, well, we're really looking for more of a fast-killing kind of person, so...
Oh, you'd be surprised how quickly something will die when it's on fire, stricken with disease, and having its life drained from its body all at the same time.
Were you not hugged enough as a child or something?
You just don't understand the immense power that studying fell magic can give you, little mage.
Whatever, your DPS is lower than mine.
Okay, I know his methods are a bit troubling, but we really need another person and-
I vanquish thee, my sinister prey!
My pet! No! What have you done?
Thank you for listening. Now go out, my minions. Let nothing stand in your way. Until next time.